Hey guys, welcome back to episode 23. So last week we talked about shifting from lead gen to demand creation, and it's building trust before the buyer even enters the funnel. This week we're going to zoom into a key moment in the funnel, which is the landing page, where clicks turn into leads or they slip away. So why does a landing page matter so much? Landing pages are the gateway to your pipeline, and a poor design or poor messaging will equal lost opportunities.
Yeah, and then of course you've got your general website pages, which is, I suppose, your kind of service pages where you're describing your services and things like that. They are generally not good for conversion-focused campaigns, especially if you're pushing people over from paid channels. And of course, the difference between a homepage and a campaign landing page is the landing page is completely focused for conversion. It's generally focused on a single thing. So if it's a service, so if you're trying to sell SEO as an example, or web design, when you're pushing someone over from a paid channel like Google Ads or, you know, or social media, then essentially what you do there is push them onto a landing page where it's got less menus, there's less clutter, the message is completely directed at that particular person that, or buyer persona or ICP, if you like. So the message, there's a good messaging strategy there. The elements on the page are set up to make sure that it's actually driving the user to take a conversion on that particular page, whether it be to reach out through a contact form, or it could be an e-commerce page for to make a sale, etc., etc. There are big differences on the types of content for the different types of pages.
And there are some key elements of a high converting B2B landing page. So the first thing you want to do on a landing page is have a headline, which is clear, concise, and speaks directly to your ICP's problem or their goal. You want to have a subheadline, which supports the headline with a quick benefit statement. And yeah, it pretty much just supports exactly the problem or the goal that you've outlined in your headline. And then the visuals. So you want to have relevant images or videos that build trust and show value. With this as well, we've seen some clients, you know, that will use, when you live in Australia and you see a photo of an American person, you know that there's something about them that you can tell that they're American. So you want to be using images of people that are from your country, from your town, with the same kind of demographics.
That's right. The thing is, we've had clients whereby, you know, when they've sent some images through themselves that they've sourced, they've probably just went into Google and sourced them straight from Google, which is a big no-no to begin with. But as you say, you know they're American, not just because of how they look or how they dress, but the elements in the background. So you might see one of those little hydrants, for instance, on the side of the road, or that you can notice that the house, say for instance, it's a real estate company, and they're wanting a house on their hero section, for instance, which is where your headline and sub headline would sit, and they've picked an image that has an American kind of house, but they're in Mackay, for instance, in Queensland. It's just not going to work, and of course you need to make sure that you know, the content and things, the visual, not just the visuals, but the headline and sub headline are geared towards the people that you're trying to aim at as well. You know, so if you take the example of a real estate company that aims to provide, you know, a house up to $600,000, it's aimed at, you know, a family four, you know, that's a big difference. A bit different if you're trying to attract someone that's, you know, in the million investment range, right? So whereas the other one might be actually a young professional, maybe on their own, maybe looking for investment. So that stuff all matters when you're setting up your landing pages. And it's not just high converting landing pages either, it's even your service pages, you know?
Yeah. And with your images as well, you want to ensure that you're not just going to Google and taking any photo that looks good and pretty for you. You want to make sure that they're not licensed, that they're free to use. And maybe even if you head off to like Pixabay or FreePics, you can get free images there, or you can purchase images on like Shutterstock and that as well.
Of course.
That just ensures that you're not going to get, copyrighted, or nobody's going to come with some legal documents.
Aye, for copyright infringement, which we I've experienced myself. But the thing is, we would always recommend that our clients, if it's not I mean, we obviously do this for our clients, but if people are doing their websites themselves, is to actually get their phone out, right? Because a lot of phones are 4K phones, and they take good photos. Is go around your local town, take some photos. If you need people to be in there, ask your friends to stand in if need be. It doesn't take much to get some good quality local photos which people can resonate with right away, and it's much better than using, free stock photography and things like that as well.
So the next thing is social proof. So you want to show testimonials, client logos, and case study teasers. That just reinforces your service or your product. It shows that other people have, used your product, bought your product or service. They've had a great experience, and it makes you just look like an absolute legend.
The thing is with social proof is normally nowadays, especially with the advent of not even just AI, but social media and things like that, the first thing people do, especially when they're looking for to make a big purchase, like a pool, for instance, or a property, the first thing they'll do is they'll ask their friends, can you recommend a pool company for to do my pool? Can you recommend a mortgage broker for to help us secure our next home, or a car loan specialist or whatever it is. At the end of the day, people need social proof just to give them that little bit of trust in people, especially nowadays with so many scams and things like that people are going on. And you know yourself, Chloe, that people can put anything up on a website. That doesn't necessarily mean that they are who they say they are, or and that they can do what they say they can do. And it's not just for websites either. I mean, this extends, out with just in no the normal community, if you like, when people are putting up posters and things. Just because someone says that they can do a roof doesn't necessarily mean that they can do it very well, And this is more so true for what the industry we work in, right? Where everyone thinks that they can do a website, and until they try and do the website, and they wonder why they're not getting any leads. That's why they come to us.
The next part is you want to have some benefits and features. So in this section, it's really important throughout your whole landing page that you're focusing on solving the your ICP, your customers' pain points, rather than just stating, what we do and, oh, we do this or we do that. When you put the client as the hero, they feel seen. And they feel heard, and they're more inclined to take action rather than you saying, "Oh, my service does this or my product does that."
The fact
Yeah,
that,
so focus on the pain points.
that's right. And the fact is, Chloe, nobody cares what you do. All your customers care about is how you can help them. So you need to be that guide, if you like, for to help the customer become the hero of their own issues. They've helped. They've solved the problem. You're just helping guiding them to that. So that's hugely important. And again, when you're doing things like benefits and features, that content needs to be tailored to your customers and their pain points, as you mentioned, really just to try and hit home on those pain points to show them that you know what you're talking about.
Next thing is a call to action or a CTA. So you want to make it visible and compelling. So book a free demo versus submit. When you're giving something away for free, they're more inclined to, go through with it. I think we have, what do we have on ours? Get a free request a strategy session. So making them a bit more compelling rather than just submit or contact. You want to use action-oriented language. Like I said just before, and you want to place multiple CTAs if you have like a long landing page, but you want to also avoid the clutter. So in our hero sections, we like to have the headline, subheadline, and then call to action. Makes it quick, simple, and easy. And then we'll have a bit of social proof. And then kind of each element. So we'd have the next part for benefits and features. You can list your benefits and features, how you're going to help them, and then add in a button there. Makes it simple because when you're going through a landing page, they might only get to a certain point and you want them to take action, as quick as possible. And if they're not going to make it all the way to the bottom where you've got the call to action, then you're going to lose out on those leads.
That's right. And an important thing to note here as well is I've seen, and this is probably because of what the way that HubSpot was kind of evolved over the years, whereby, as soon as you're on the landing page, the first thing you see is a form to fill in. The chances are when someone's coming in and they don't know your brand from Adam, is they're not going to part with any details at all whatsoever. So even for us, for instance, having that call to action and the hero is quite good for people that we've been nurturing for some time, where they can click it right away and fill in the form or give us a call or whatever. So I would imagine, having that form right at the very top, unless that person's ready to go right away, which is generally not the case, unless the content and everything's geared as bottom of the funnel, where they're, the prospect is always already customer aware, sorry, problem aware. They already know that you have the solution for them, and then they're ready to buy. Fine. So you need to make sure that actually when you're creating these landing pages, that they are created for where that customer is in the buyer's journey as well, and just apply best practice there.
The forms that you have on your landing page, you want to keep it simple and only ask for what you need. If you've got 10 different form fields, then the likelihood of someone sitting there and filling them all out is next to none, unless they're really concerned about your service or your product. Yeah, it's just cluttered if you keep that there. You want to use progressive profiling if possible. And explain why you need the info and what happens next. So in most of our, I think in all of our, lead forms, we'll have the name. So you can either do first name, last name, but we just like to keep it full name, the phone number and the email address. Keeps it super simple. The two things that you'll need to contact them, and you're gonna need their name too, so you know who you're talking to. Now, we actually had a client quite a while ago that was said, oh, well, why don't we add in the address? Why don't we add in this so we can get everything right there? We'll get everything in the form, and then we don't have to do that later on.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be filling in their address if they're not going to go ahead with buying your service or product.
That's right.
And that's gonna, and a lot of people, because that's a privacy thing as well, and a lot of people will feel that, oh, never mind, I'll just go to this other company that's, just wanting my phone number so they can give me a call.
Well, the thing is, Chloe, people are generally lazy. So they want things to be done for them, and they want things to be as quick as possible. So the more form fields is, and the data shows this, by the way, that the more form fields that you've got to fill in, the more of a conversion killer it actually is. Now, this is obviously dependent on where the customer is in the buyer's journey. If, for instance, they're just reaching out because they've seen a post on Facebook and they want a quick quote, but then obviously first name, email, and maybe just a little message, just so that they can give a little bit more context, it's probably enough for people to contact you, right? Whereas if they've already contacted you and you're going through the onboarding process, that's when you would take that opportunity to start collecting more information. So then essentially, when you're just getting a customer in, make it as simple as for them as you possibly can. Now, what we did actually within our application is I just did this other week there, whereby if someone's contacted us before via our contact form, we actually pre-populate the first name, last name, email, and phone number, if they've already provided that information, which they would need to for in order for us to contact them. So if they then come to contact us again, that information's already pre-populated, if you like. So all they then need to do is just tell us where they found us this time, and a little message, and then submit the form, just keeping it nice, quick and easy. This is where, as you say, the progressive profiling comes in. And it's now what you can do here, both with HubSpot and with Motic and other marketing automation platforms, is not just pre-populate the fields, but you can actually start to hide fields that they've already completed. So that means that when they come to the form, all they'll see is just the message and the submit button, the call to action button, which again is good, but it might get a bit confusing in my opinion, where you've been in this form before and the fields are missing. How do they know that they've got the right details? Plus as well, if that person's working part-time for two different companies and they want to utilise your service for both companies, it's a good idea to still provide those fields so that they can change the details if required. So, but it's definitely a good idea to have forms which are less cluttered. If you genuinely need the address there, then just make sure that you add an API or something like that, where, or even just browser pre-populated form fields is enough generally for to fill in the address and things like that. But the less fields there are, the more conversions you'll generally expect.
Yep. Now with your forms as well, when you're doing, say, Facebook ads, or you do have an ad and it's going to a landing page, you will find that a lot of people, once it gets past that 9 p.m. time, a lot of people will start scrolling and clicking things and filling things in, and the next day they go, oh, I don't even remember doing that. And that's why people end up buying things late at night. With your form, what I like to do on all my forms is to ensure that the lead quality is high rather than the volume. So what you can do for that is you can add a little checkbox to that they have to actually manually click, and that confirms that they agree to be contacted by you. And if they don't click that, then they can't submit the lead form, which is also helps to decrease your
low quality leads
and cost per lead as well, because you don't want leads coming through and then going, oh, I don't even remember doing that, or oh. Next thing is trust signals. So you want to ensure that you have security badges, privacy notes, and compliance info. So your landing page should link off to your terms and conditions, your privacy policy, and that should have everything on there so that they know what's going to happen with their data, and how you're going to, utilize this data, how long you're going to have it for, et cetera, et cetera. And the most important thing is mobile optimization. So you need to ensure that your landing page is fast loading and easy as to use on the phone. Because if it's not, and it looks like everything's everywhere, or it's taken 5 minutes to load in, then they're not even going to get to your landing page.
That's right. It's just too difficult to navigate. And another note on that as well is generally landing pages won't have any menus on them. So your site menu and things like that generally disappear. Your logo would be central, but you need to give them that opportunity to get off that page and go back to your website. And this is where you need to reiterate the fact that your logo would generally be that link back to your main website if they choose not to proceed with the contact form. And sometimes that might be the case if they require additional nurturing, so that they can actually go to your website and read more about who you are, what you provide, and all the rest of it. And then if they're ready to buy, then they'll convert anyway.
Yeah. So what kills conversions on landing pages? So overwhelming visitors with too much information or jargon. If you're not hitting straight to the point, their pain points, and exactly what we just mentioned about a great landing page, and you're just, giving them way too much, people are probably not even going to read that and just bounce off. Having vague CTAs. So as we also mentioned, having CTAs like learn more or just submit, Doesn't entice somebody to, want to contact you or click through to your lead form.
That's right. And the thing is, CTAs, well, from some of this content, it sounds like we're just talking about a button. You can a call to action isn't just a button. You can create a whole section as the call to action. So that allows you then to put in relevant images to support the content and the messaging that you've got in there. So you just need to make sure that that is aimed at your ICP or your buyer persona. And that'll help you actually generate more conversions.
Long or complicated forms that scare people off. So as we just mentioned, if you add in too much, onto a form, people will probably be less inclined to fill that out and progress. Distracting navigation links that encourage exit out. So as we mentioned, if you're having a landing page, you don't usually have, your menu items, but you have a link off to your website. Keeps it straight to the point, especially if you're doing these landing pages for like Facebook ads or Google ads. You want to keep it straight to the point and targeted towards those keywords and what your offer is.
Correct.
Lack of alignment between ad copy and landing page messaging. So as we just said, if say you're a pool company and you're doing an ad on DIY pool kits that you're doing. You don't want to go to your landing page and then it just be all about, your different pools or that your installation. You want it to be all about the DIY pools, what they can do, how they can do it, come forward, let's go. And the last one is slow page loading speeds. So as we mentioned, I think Google's what two under 2 seconds loading time is the preferred loading time for Google. If it's over that, then they'll flag it as there's
Too
problems here.
slow, yeah.
And you will see a decrease in your conversions and probably you'll have a very lot very high bounce rate. So I have some actionable takeaways for you guys to improve your landing pages this week. I want you to review your existing landing pages with a conversion focus checklist. Do some A to B test headlines and call to actions regularly. I want you to simplify your forms and reduce that friction. And use heat maps or session recordings to see where your visitors are dropping off, and you can alter that landing page. And I want you to align your landing page messaging tightly with your ads and your emails driving traffic. So for episode 24, we're diving into a critical but often overlooked business risk, which is the hidden cost of an inaction. We're going to learn how hesitation and delay could be quietly holding your growth back and practical ways that you can break free and start moving forward.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, we'll see you on episode 24. Bye,
Thank you,
guys.
guys.